Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach.
And it's Carol the Coach. Hi, I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I am doing a specialized show for people who suffer from sexual addiction or love somebody who suffers from sexual addiction. And tonight, I'm very excited to be talking with the Leadhams. John and Elaine Leadham are licensed clinical social workers in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and they are experts in helping couples to recover from sexual addiction and to create intimacy in their lives. And so just about 15 minutes from now, we're going to be talking with them and finding out what kind of tools and strategies they have that can actually help better your relationship. I know if you're listening to the show, you either know that you have a full-fledged sexual addiction, or perhaps you're questioning whether you have some compulsiveness and obsession with sex, and so you are listening to this show to get more information. I also have a lot of clients who love somebody who is in active sexual addiction or are recovering. And so, again, John and Elaine Leadham are going to be helping us to determine what we can do to get healthy and what you can do to improve your relationship, improve the intimacy, and build the trust that typically occurs when that emotional intimacy has been violated by sexual addiction. So I'm real excited to be speaking with them. They've written a fascinating book called One in the Spirit. It's a meditation course for recovering couples. And this book actually highlights day by day what you can do to build more intimacy in the relationship. And I showed it to my husband, and I said, you know, I think this is something that we need to practice. So our technique is, once I see them for the show, I've been reading it, I'm going to put it in our bathroom, and each day we are both going to take a look at our day, and each day has a challenge to all couples, but especially couples in recovery. And there's a reflection, something to really think about, and last but not least, a prayer that you can utilize to actually develop more strength, more spirituality, and more connection both to a higher power, to ourselves, and to our partner. And that's really what intimacy is all about. Now, many of you know, I was single till I was 44. And I said I was the poster child for being single. And then I met my husband. And prior to that, one of the things I knew in working with families and working with couples was that so many therapists believe that you can get healthy, you can work on yourself, whether you're single, separated, divorced, or in relationship with somebody else. But clearly, the hardest work to do on yourself is when you're married. And then if there's an addiction, involved, it absolutely increases the tension, the mistrust, the betrayal. And so when you have all those extra stressors in your life, you know, that's when you have to work harder on yourself and on the relationship. So this book is a wonderful opportunity to really focus on who we are as people, what kinds of things we do need to work on, and then how we can challenge ourselves and encourage ourselves to take better care of ourselves. I mean, it's very, very important to work on ourselves individually and then in union with our partner. So I've got to tell you, I'm going to be using this in our relationship. And many of you know that my husband is a recovering alcoholic. He says, you know, it's okay that I share that information with you all. And what we know about sexual addiction is that 87% of all sexual addicts have another addiction. I myself am a workaholic, and I'm really working on that. Anybody who knows me knows that I have been working diligently to really stop working so much and just being. And boy, is that tough. So I want to encourage all of you to pay attention to the show. Give us a call at 646-595-3284 and feel free to ask John, Elaine, or myself any questions that you would like. And what I know to be true is that people listen to the show. They download it. They don't hear it tonight. They hear it later in the week. So if that's you and you're listening to it now, feel free to email me. We'll be also sharing John and Elaine's information so you can also check in with them. So I'm just very excited about the show. I'm very excited about our guests and the material that they have to offer. Welcome to the Carol the Coach Show. How are you? I do believe that we have somebody on the line. This is Carol the Coach. Are you there? Okay, I must be missing them. Now, again, our number is 646-595-3284. Can't wait to hear from you as we talk with John and Elaine about what they've got going on in their life. Okay. And now let me tell you a little bit about sexual addiction. You know, sexual addiction has behavior patterns that one establishes and becomes obsessive. And usually there's somebody who clearly has, well, they have all sorts of trauma in their life. Unless it's internet porn that has gotten them in trouble, they really do have a lot of trauma that they've had to deal with in their own childhood of origins. You know, 64% of all sexual addicts have had physical or psychological abuse. And then what happens is oftentimes they'll block that and reenact that as they get older, and it manifests itself as sexual addiction. So I'm very excited to be working with anybody who has this kind of problem, because I know it's dark. It is absolutely a dark situation whereby you may not know where to go. You may not know that there are SAA groups that can very clearly help you, 12-step groups that will get you going, as well as there are telemeetings. If you don't have a group in your city, you can dial numbers and you can call me at Carol the Coach. Well, you can email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. Or call me at 317-218-3479 after the show, and I can get you set up with these telemeetings so that you can find out more about sexual addiction as well as 12-step groups. Okay, it looks like we may have a caller. Is this John or Elaine? Well, it looks like we might be having some difficulty here. So hopefully they can hang up, call back, and we can be talking to them. Again, the number is 646-595-3284. All right. Now, I want to talk with you a little bit about what it's like when you know and you sense that you have a problem, but you're not sure what to do about it. You know, the best books to read I mean, there are lots and lots of books available. Facing the Shadows and Out of the Shadows are two of the Bibles for sexual abuse. Very clearly, that provides an opportunity to get to understand what is sexual addiction and what you may need to do to get healthy. You know, this is something that you can't fight on your own. You really need to access a lot of different resources. Besides 12-step meetings, Patrick Carnes has developed a recovery kit, and certified sexual addiction therapists know what that is, and they can get that kit to you, and you can begin a 140-day program, which you may very well find very helpful. And besides the groups, there's the SAA book. You can get on the website and buy that book, or you can go to probably any facility that has alcohol or drug meetings, and they'll have access to the SAA book. So I highly recommend bibliotherapy when you're first starting out and you don't know if you've got a problem. And then it's very important for people to talk to a specialist who knows something about this addiction. I'm not saying that therapists in general are bad choices, but they don't have the specialization one needs to really get you to the right place. And that's why I'm doing this show. I mean, as far as I know, this show is only available to you. And I don't think there's any other show on Blog Talk Radio that talks about sexual addiction. And that's why it is so important. Now, I'm a big believer in doing couples work. You know, I see marital therapists ongoing. And I see marital therapists and help train them so that they can work in marriages and with families. And I really do that because it's so important to help them to work on this situation. So, I am very excited to be talking with John and Elaine tonight. And I've got a caller. Who is this?
This is John Leadham and Elaine Leadham.
Hi.
Hello,
John
there, Carol.
And Elaine. How are you?
We're great. How's our favorite coach?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I was having a little technical difficulty with the phones, but I think we are together now. Now, how long ago did you write One in the Spirit, the meditation course for recovering couples?
Well, it has been written over the past 36 years, actually, because it is very much the story of the challenges we have experienced in our own marriage. It went to print last year and has been very well received so far. And it is an exciting opportunity that we have to share the message of hope to other recovering couples who have traveled some of the same roads that we have.
So together you struggled as a couple, and 36 years of putting this thing together, and now you know what challenges you have faced, and this book is actually a Bible in helping couples to regain that intimacy. And you have kind of a catch-all phrase, don't you, about being in the inn?
Yeah, it's something that our clients have come to understand, I think, in a lot of ways sets us apart from an awful lot of very talented marriage and family therapists in the field, and that is that we ourselves, as recovering couples, practice what we call a shared program of recovery whose core component is a commitment to be in rather than trying to maintain a love relationship through the use of Hallmark cards and Valentine's gifts and date nights. we've developed a model that this book, One in the Spirit, is based on that teaches couples how to get actually more emotionally involved with each other. We call it being in love.
Well, that makes sense. It's kind of similar to being in the be as opposed to the do.
Yeah, very much.
And Elaine,
yes.
What has it been like to be part of a team working on recovery and developing intimacy?
Well, Carol, in the beginning, it scared me to death.
I bet.
It truly did. I was raised in a family with two active alcoholic parents. I came into the romance with John terrified of being close with him, of developing intimacy, and really being very unsure as to how to even do that. Up to the time that I met John, I had failed romances, and most of that was because I was more the type that would be emotionally shut down. I would isolate myself from others because of just being so afraid of being vulnerable. Part of that comes from a history of trauma and abuse, and I really never felt safe in a romantic relationship.
It makes sense. Having those parents that were both alcoholic, you probably learned early not to talk, trust, or feel.
Exactly.
And therefore the relationships didn't work, and then you met John. And so, John, what happened? You met Elaine, and what transpired from there?
Well, in our first meeting, she absolutely hated me.
Oh, that's always a good combination.
And with a good cause. I think she vowed the first night we met to never talk to me again because I was trying to direct rather than share in her recovery. I had preceded her in recovery by a number of years, and I was going to make sure, because of my very sordid past in both substance addiction and sex addiction, that this relationship was going to be different than all the rest. And she was going to be different, and she was so different she left and decided never to see me again.
Well, you know, that oftentimes happens. You almost have to detach to then reattach in a healthier way. So then what happened?
Well, I'm not sure I would call it detachment. She ran like hell, actually.
Okay.
But we met again in the fellowship that we belonged in, and we shared a common interest, really, in changing the way we were going to relate to other people. I had been sexually and romantically celibate for about 13 months before we met because of the absolute horrors that it caused for me and my recovery from my other addiction. And this relationship was going to be, for me, different than the rest, and I was not going to put sexual intimacy ahead of emotional and spiritual intimacy. That was my
Well, you got clear, didn't you?
I was very clear. When I got turned down in my efforts to become a priest to avoid the problems I was having with sex and romance, I decided I had better learn something about what made me tick and why I changed so much when I entered a relationship.
And, you know, I definitely believe that people that are in recovery oftentimes are longing for that ideal relationship. And so, again, instead of taking care of themselves, whether that's drug addiction, alcohol addiction, sex addiction, they look for that person to be the Band-Aid for their soul. And so, you know, that's obviously the wrong direction to go to, because really you have to work on yourself first.
Very much so. My marriage proposal to Elaine, the night we got engaged, was somewhat unorthodox. After I asked her to marry me, and she said yes, I said, you need to understand that my relationship with my God and my relationship with my recovery program come before my relationship with you. So will you marry me? And Elaine said.
Elaine, what'd you say?
I was stunned. I was stunned, and I was hurt, and I felt I don't know, I just felt very angry. I was used to being the apple of people's eyes, and I really, especially with men, and here he is saying that I was third on the list, later I came to understand. I came to understand very well that, you know, first and foremost needed to be the God of John's understanding, as well as for myself, and recovery before our relationship. And without that, we weren't going to have a relationship of any merit. You know, I had tried doing it the other way before, which is, you know, as long as, you know, I leaned on the partner and the partner leaned on me, everything was going to be great. And it never worked out that way. You know, so there's been a lot of trial and error in our relationship as we've grown together. And I think the attraction at the beginning was the fact that we had a lot of common suffering that we knew from our own respective stories, and it was very attractive to find a partner that was willing to share about that and was willing to hear my story and to be a part of it.
Yes, and yet I bet you had to talk to your own sponsor and to your fellowship about your initial reaction of insecurity and saying, hey, I'm third on the list. And you had to reframe that and put that back in perspective and look at it differently.
Well, I certainly did. I was very new in recovery when I met John. Like he said, he had some years on me. So I was developing a stronger network as time passed. But when I first began in recovery, I was really reticent to develop close relationships. I was scared of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found that very threatening to trust others. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, what I came to understand is I didn't trust myself. But certainly part of, you know, my recovery includes having a sponsor and having a support fellowship that I need to share with and to be a part of.
And so then as you two grew together, obviously you have put together 5 challenges that threaten the romance of recovering couples. And I was wondering if you could talk about those for a few minutes before I ask you some very interpersonal questions.
Sure. Any questions? Any questions, fair game. And any questions that your listeners may have are fair game. We really don't keep any secrets about the challenges that we've experienced in our recovery. In our work with recovering couples, which has spanned the last 38 years, we have seen tens of thousands of couples, and the recovering matchup tends to be pretty strong. It initially tends to be strong because of the common bond that they share, but they also share some challenges that can make romance very difficult to sustain. They both will come to a relationship with a common mistrust of emotional intimacy. They will both have experienced varying levels of traumatic reactions, both to the way in which their addiction has progressed, whether it's to food or gambling, as well as the impact that it's had on others. Mm-hmm. They struggle routinely with maintaining commitments, often told, unfortunately, by members of their support group, that in order to maintain a healthy romance, all they really need to do is to take care of their proverbial side of the street. There's nothing really they should do about where their partner is at, and certainly not be involved in their partner's recovery program. And lastly,
so you're saying that in fellowship, oftentimes support groups, sponsors will misguide a person and say, just worry about yourself.
Very much so. It is not a part of any of the literature-based teachings of any 12-step program that I have been aware of. But the unspoken message is take care of yourself, stay out of your partner's recovery. And I can tell you that if I had not listened to that direction, we would not have experienced some of the trauma that we did early in our marriage, when I was working what was called a separate program of recovery, which is why
Yeah, I was going to say, in lots of ways, that's what this book is all about. It's to help couples to work separately but together on
their recovery. Separately on themselves and jointly on their relationship, because they will grow stronger in their recovery as a result of having the person with the greatest level of insight and accountability helping them address their issues. It's not taking responsibility for, it's being responsible to your partner. And that's, in our experience, very different.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I don't know if you heard me at the beginning of the show, but it really, yes, you know, we can all grow individually, but truly in union with another person, that brings up all the insecurities that we lived in our childhood of origin. And so, therefore, it is important to do our own work, but to work on the relationship also in a way that enhances each person's individuality and the coupleship. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that, Carol. I was thinking when you were saying that and when John was sharing that that was some of the regrets that I held for a long time in my part of this relationship. I certainly did, you know, work on myself and made a commitment in the relationship, but I also held on to secrets that I had felt that no one would know about or hear and that I would take to my grave. And one of them was about a betrayal that I had in this marriage in terms of an affair early on. And so much of that came from me following what I thought was the direction I was being given in a 12-step recovery program to basically not bring some of the real pain or a lot of the emotional problems that I was having to my partner, but to stay with my sponsor and to do the steps and to, you know, work my program, you know, keep my side of the street clean, et cetera. The other part, of course, was because I had feared going into a lot of the trauma material that had occurred because of some childhood abuses.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as a result of that, you know, I kept the secret, and I was encouraged to keep the secret because I was told basically that it wasn't my right to devastate John with that kind of news in order to get relief. And I really wasn't wanting to do it because of relief. I had continued to stay in the program and to apply the spiritual principles. And the reason why I wanted to do that is that I knew that keeping a secret in this relationship was only going to weaken the bond that we had, and I could no longer do that, to the point that I really came to understand that I needed to either share, you know, the secret that I was holding, or I needed to just, you know, depart from this relationship, or for certain I would probably end up drinking or something you know, equally damaging. So I did end up sharing my betrayal with John, and although it was every bit as devastating as you could possibly imagine because I had held on to it for so long, it was really just another deeper understanding that I had gained that all of the messages I got from, you know, separate, you know, being separate, keeping it separate, was really a detriment to the way that I was operating in this relationship. And it really didn't call upon what I know to be real and what I trust, which there always has been and continues to be a power greater than ourselves in this relationship that I can call on at any time.
Well, that makes so much sense. So, John, how did you feel when she shared the devastating news?
Well, it was about 27 years into a relationship that I thought was about as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred, that disclosure, on a Christmas morning, and I knew as I saw her pacing in a blank stare around the house that there was something that she needed to say, and so I brought her to me to talk about this, whatever it was going to be. And in spite of all that I knew about loving Elaine, that disclosure left me not being sure what the truth was. I was so grateful that morning that first was my relationship with my God, then my relationship with my 12-step fellowship, and then my marriage, because I had a concrete basis for trust and acceptance to rely on when I wasn't sure of who my partner was.
Mm-hmm. And you know, here Elaine is. Elaine, you're trusting your gut that it's really something that you need to divulge, and it's important to the relationship. And then, John, you trusted your gut. As you saw her pacing, you brought her to you because you knew that she needed to share something that was very, very difficult for her. You know, I'm thinking about people that might be listening to the show or who have experienced some sort of situation like this, and obviously you two are experts at handling this. You did this personally, and then you wrote about it. Would you just share with our listening audience how people can get a hold of you so they can be writing that down as they continue to listen to your story?
Callers are welcome to contact our office. We have a staff of licensed clinicians and certified sex addiction therapists at 732-797-1444. They can email us at leadem@comcast.net, L-E-A-D-E-M at comcast.net, or they can read more about us on our webpage at www.leademcounseling.com.
Yeah, I think that's so important that they know that they can actually talk with you specifically or email you, because there's so much shame attached to a betrayal. And here the two of you appeared so solid, and it made the deceitfulness even worse, didn't it, Elaine? I mean, you had to really be struggling with the compartmentalization of loving this man, being honest, and not being honest.
Oh, I struggled a great deal with it. I mean, I really did, and it was, again, because I had shied away from some of the work that I needed to do. It was nothing about trying to, you know, retaliate against John for some type of, you know, hurt or wrong, or certainly not because I wanted to get out of the relationship. I'm talking about my betrayal. And then keeping it a secret was against everything that I really believed to be true, but it really wasn't difficult for me to find a person that would validate for me to keep it a secret, stating that, reminding me of the ninth step where it said, where is to injure those or others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it looks like we do have some callers. Do you mind if we take a break and take one of the callers?
By all means.
Okay. Hi, you are listening to Hope, Strength, and Recovery with Carol the Coach. What's your question for John and Elaine?
Hi, I'm wondering, you know, it's great to hear this on your show, but if you're in a program of recovery, how do you know about, or how do you talk about the subject with your partner about shared recovery when it's generally not something that anyone talks about?
I guess I'm not sure if you're saying also that your partner is in recovery. Could you say whether or not that's true?
Yes, it's true.
Okay. So I think what you're saying is that in the rooms, the 12-step rooms, you're not hearing a lot about shared program of recovery or within the fellowship.
Right, and I guess my question is, you know, in getting support for that or taking that to your support group, you know, how do you suggest getting support in your support group for that when this seems like an idea that not many people really
are endorsing?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's a good question, because you're in a catch-22. You're with a support group that may not support you in sharing this information. So, John, Elaine, what do you think?
Sure. We have certainly been through that. It was not fashionable, nor was it really acceptable to even talk about relationship problems when I began getting sober 41 years ago. What we would encourage you to do is to talk to other couples who appear to like being around each other, other couples who tend to fellowship together in the aftermath of meetings, couples that are willing to go out to coffee or out to a diner after a meeting to talk about their relationship, express your interest in working on your romance when you are at meetings. You will tend to get interested contributions from other group members and identification with other group members who will tell you some about their experience, and like the fellowship will teach us, our experience, strength, and hope is what bonds us together and gives each other hope. If you have a need to connect directly with other couples that are working on recovery together, by all means, call our office at 732-797-1444, and we will hook you up with couples who are working on recovery this way. And in fact, we were doing couples retreats some years ago when one of the couples referred to the book that we were writing as a sponsor for relationships in print. And we have a lot of couples who understand and support the dynamics of sharing their lives and their recoveries together, and we would be glad to hook you up with them.
Okay, so okay. John and Elaine, you actually have a support group of people that you could end up hooking her up with so that she can feel free to talk with other people that ascribe to the same values that you do, even if it's not necessarily safe in her own 12-step fellowship.
I wouldn't call it a support group. We have a good number of couple clients that we have worked
uh-huh.
with in therapeutic retreats that we can connect the caller with who would be willing to share their experience. But it is not a support group to that end.
That's a good point. Any
yeah.
other questions for John or Elaine?
Nope, I think that's it. Thank you. I really encourage you to go forth and to do that, whether it's calling our office or, as John had said, see if there's couples that want to go out afterwards to a restaurant for coffee or something, because I remember very well the loneliness that I would feel many times when I wanted to share about enriching the romance with John in their relationship or shared relationship problems and was, you know, pretty much discouraged to do so. Or to tell, you know, I was encouraged to focus on myself or comments such like that. I remember very well the loneliness that I felt and the confusion I felt during that time. So, again, if you get stuck, please call our office. Do not hesitate, and we'll do everything we can to help you. I can also tell you that other couples have purchased our book, One in the Spirit, and they have written us or they have called us in the office and told us that it's been an awesome beginning for them to read the daily reflections and to do the daily suggestions and exercises, and then have later shared it with a couple or two in their recovery programs that have come to also appreciate it, and then a bond began at that level.
Good advice. Thank you, John and Elaine. Any other questions before I go on to the next caller?
No, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. All right, we have another caller. Are you on the line? Oh, looks like we lost him. Okay, they'll be back, I'm sure. I've got a few questions for you because obviously that is an important issue. And so what's your advice to couples who have experienced betrayal in their relationship and they cannot seem to move past their traumatic memories and resentments? I mean, you know how that is. They stay stuck in it. It breeds more and more resentment, and it's really difficult.
You know, Carol, I faced this many, many times in my work that I do here at Leadom Counseling, and I can tell you that these are couples whose lives have been touched by addiction, you know, whether it's sexual addiction or a substance abuse or, you know, eating disorder, et cetera, and they share that they just can't move past the traumatic memories and the resentment that they hold. And I find that if these partners agree that they're wanting to move past the betrayal, that that is what their commitment is at the time, I share with them that the relationship that they long for may still be possible, but that it requires a great deal more than just being abstinent and to have a desire to change, that it really requires change. And then I share with them the need to be in with each other, you know, that what we talked about before, that willingness to move out of the shadows of the addiction and towards one another through the process of being emotionally vulnerable with one another. You know, and many times I find that they need to work through past injuries, you know, that have laid the foundation for their current fear. But I assure them that they're not going to be alone, that truly many couples that we have worked with have done this work before in the past, and they are truly thriving in their relationship today. We encourage
them. So, Elaine,
them,
when they do that, do they come into the office by themselves or do they come together as a couple?
For my experience is most of them come in together.
Okay.
Occasionally they'll come alone, but most come together. And
mm-hmm.
they are looking for that hope to get beyond the betrayal. It is very unusual for me to start in a first session with it ending with them not wanting to continue. although when they start in the first session, they are truly flooded by their painful memories and or reactions to the betrayal that has occurred through the addiction in that relationship.
Yeah, that makes sense. We may have another caller. Are you on the line? Okay. Are you there? No. How about this?
Hello?
Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. What's your question?
My question is, it sounds like that they are advocating for complete disclosure with my partner. Is that correct?
I need to know more about what kind of addiction problem you're talking about and what you interpret to be complete disclosure.
Well, I've been in recovery from alcohol and drugs for many years, and my partner, are you advocating that I talk to my partner almost the way that I talk to my sponsor about sexual addiction?
Yeah, we are.
That my partner be a part of my support group?
Very much so. We promote the idea that when doing that sharing, first off, you have an informed consent from your partner to do so, and that would look like asking permission to share more about the challenges that you have experienced both in your active addiction as well as in recovery. But if your partner is going to be getting information for the first time that he or she hasn't heard about in the past, then it would be wise for you to get guidance or direction from an addiction professional who can help you and guide you through that disclosure process. Far too often, especially in the realm of sex addiction, a disclosure looks like a dumping, looks like an expose about what it is and where I've been and who I have done it with. And our model for disclosing in recovery experience from sex addiction is very different. We really look to help the sex or love addict make clear to their partner how the disease has developed, and to be able to demonstrate that they have knowledge of the impact that it has had on the people in their lives and what their plan is for changing. Far too often, disclosures, again, look like dumpings followed by "I'm really sorry" at the end. We don't promote that model of disclosure, but we are promoting that you get to the point in your recovery and in your relationship where your partner is as close and is as intimate to you as your support group member or sponsor is. And I know it's a big challenge, but we do it. We do it every morning.
And what is the name of your book?
One in the Spirit. It's a meditation course for recovering couples that looks at 52 different themes that typically challenge recovering relationships. It addresses a theme a week, and within the course of that week, each day will address some aspect in more detail about that challenge. And the couple gets to share their experience, strength, and hope around the question, and then on the weekend will perform, if they choose, independently or together, exercises which give them a chance to share even more about what that theme has been for the week.
Well, that sounds like a pretty scary road to go down from the AA training that I've had over the years. It sounds completely different from my understanding. Is I go to AA and my partner goes to Al-Anon, and everything is kept separate, and you clean your house and I clean my house, and we go to dinner on Saturday night and everything is good.
See, and I think that's what John and Elena are saying, is that they found that actually was destructive to the relationship. And with the right guidelines, and they have those guidelines, you can actually develop more intimacy when you're more honest with your partner. But you're right. There needs to be boundaries. There needs to be somewhat of a protocol. And, John, you were referencing that there was a consent that needed to be agreed upon, correct?
Yeah, Carol, when we introduce a couple to a shared program recovery, there are a number of preliminary prerequisites, if you will, that the couple has to address in terms of physical, emotional, and spiritual safety, commitments for what their recovery program is going to look like, a commitment that they're going to have support group members outside of the coupleship to support their recovery, that the day-to-day investment in change is not a replacement for their support group, but an addition to their support group. I understand the concerns about going against the tide, but can tell you, not as an expert on AA, because there aren't any experts, but I can tell you, having read the literature pretty thoroughly, there is nothing that suggests that couples need to work separate programs of recovery. In fact, in AA's big book, the author makes reference to the fact that a person's spouse would be a good person to take a third step surrender experience with. So there's plenty of precedent in the literature, but it is in the rooms where folks frightened of that level of vulnerability and transparency will promote the stay on your side of the street, clean your side of the street. I did it, and it really hurt both of us by ignoring what I believe to be a serious problem that Elaine was suffering with that she never addressed, and I didn't hold their feet to the fire.
Well, and I think it really helps when you have some trained professionals that can help both people work through this. And that may be part of your hesitancy, caller, that clearly, you know, it seems not only scary for you, but you're afraid of what that may entail for your partner, correct?
Or the consequences.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would highly recommend that you take a look at their website. And John and Elaine, can you share that one more time?
You can reach us at 732-797-1444 or read about us and what we believe in terms of coupleship at www.leademcounseling.com.
And
thank you so much for calling. Elaine, you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight what John had mentioned at the end, which, you know, we really do have prerequisites that we have received consent from the couple, from each partner in the coupleship, prior to getting into some of the deeper material. And, you know, we make sure that they have an agreed-upon safety plan, that they have identified what they experience as physically, emotionally, or spiritually unsafe in the relationship, and they put that out there as individuals, they share it with each other, and then come upon an agreed-upon safety contract that each abide to as they go forward with taking these new risks in their relationship.
Thank you so much, caller, and I really encourage you to take a look at that website and just stay open to the possibility that this may be another way to do things that can promote ongoing intimacy and a healthier coupleship. So keep listening to the show. I appreciate your call.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I think we have another caller on the line. Are you there? Well, we just lost them. It seems like there's something disconnecting, and then they call right back. So in the meantime, that gives us a little more time to talk about some of the, you know, obviously you have some guidelines. And what do you say to couples who are getting advice that say that and suggest they should not play an active role in the romantic partner's course in recovery? I mean, if they're getting that advice directly, what would you tell them? I mean, I know, how would you encourage them to respond?
Well, I would love the opportunity to talk to them firsthand because, again, I listened to all that direction. It ran contrary to what I believed to be true. I knew that my partner was emotionally in trouble because of the sexual abuse and the rape and the incest in her life, and I knew it was impacting our relationship. I had long since come to understand, Carol, that traumatic reactions, post-traumatic reactions especially, can be triggered by equal or greater trauma or intimacy and vulnerability. And so as our relationship got more emotionally intimate, it woke up a good many of the boogeymen in my partner's life. I knew it. I saw it. I cautioned her about it. The input I received from the people who cared about me was, stay out of it. It's none of your business. Had I not done that, had I not listened to that advice, had I challenged my partner more, I think we would have both been saved a great deal of unnecessary torment.
Mm-hmm. You know, Carol, there never was a lack of love in the relationship that I share with John. And I can tell you that, you know, when I hear that from couples that do come to us about, you know, maybe they shouldn't play an active role in their partner's course in recovery, you know, I certainly share with them our story, if that's appropriate. But I remind them about, you know, what is it that they want out of their relationship, you know, to kind of take a step back from maybe what they're hearing or what they were taught in the relationships that they witnessed as children, you know, their parents' marriages or other marriages that they were exposed to, and just take a moment and evaluate what is it that they want in their relationship and that they truly want to be in, to be that connected and to experience that level of emotional connectedness and through being vulnerable and open with their partner, that we do have a path to suggest to them that they can take that would be going through the shared program of recovery.
That makes sense. Now, I'm a firm believer in the fact that, you know, marriage is that institution that holds you together when you fall in and out of love with each other. So what do you say to couples who regretfully claim that their problem is in the romance and that one or both of them has fallen out of love?
Well, we certainly have had our share of people that have come to our offices and have actually said that, those words to us, and have said one or both of them have fallen out of love. And it's when they give us a chance to really explain to them the option of what it really feels like to be in love with each other as we mm-hmm. define it, we often find that they'll say to us truthfully, you know, I've never really taken our relationship to that level of mm-hmm. closeness. I've never really had the courage, or it's never really been modeled to me, and I'm kind of confused about what you're saying, but at the same time I'm attracted to it. Or I've never really gone to any length to create this healthy bond that you're referring to. You know, and so oftentimes they'll start the conversation saying that maybe one or both has fallen out of love and end the conversation with saying, you know, it's quite possible that I would like to do this with my partner, and then that begins their journey with us.
Yeah, that makes sense. John, do you have some feelings about that?
Yeah, Elaine is so eloquent and so tender when she deals with couples. I tend to be a little bit more on the boisterous side and ask them if they know, in fact, how they have fallen out of love, that in all probability what drove them apart is what first attracted them to each other, but people have failed to see that. Sigmund Freud would have us believe that we marry our parents. I believe that we are attracted to people of similar depth. And in my experience, the way you get that depth of personality is by getting a very heavy hand in life. And if I am attracted to my partner because of the depth that they bring to the relationship, it is likely that there are going to be issues that are going to have to be addressed and that are going to come up later. If I can, one of my favorite quotes out of recovery literature entitled The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, published by Alcoholics Anonymous, makes reference to the fact that it is only where boy meets girl on AA campus and love follows at first sight that difficulties develop. That the prospective partners need to be solid AAs and long enough acquainted to know that their compatibility at physical, emotional, and spiritual levels is a fact and not wishful thinking. They need to be reasonably sure that no deep underlying emotional handicap would be likely to rise under later pressures to cripple them. I can quote that because I was directed to read it 1,000 times. Because in that text, it is saying to me that we're going to be attracted because of an unknown common bond. And if we don't address the basis for that attraction, usually common injuries, common suffering, common traumatic experiences, then it's going to rise up under later pressures to cripple us. And typically what happens when those ghosts and goblins begin to emerge is we fall out of love.
Mm-hmm.
What I ask couples is whether or not they want to fall back in. Do they want to have a marriage that looks like the way they would like their children or their grandchildren to live?
Yeah, that's a great point. It looks like we have another caller, and I'm going to ask him or her to turn down the computer as I check back in. Are you there, caller?
I think we can. Actually, I don't know why they would put it blocked, though.
Hey, I'm sorry, are you there?
That's a common thing.
What question do you have for John and Elaine?
All right, so it's within 2 hours from now, I guess, or from whenever I bought it. All right, thank you. All right, thanks.
Well, looks like he doesn't know that he's on the air, so I'm going to ask him one more time. Do you have a caller? Do you have a question for John and Elaine? Okay. Well, we've got about 3 minutes left, and, you know, again, One in the Spirit, the meditation course for recovering couples, is an excellent resource to begin to build that intimacy that you need and want. And you talk about being in the inn, which sounds like you really encourage couples to get honest and to get real with the proper supports. What advice can you offer to an individual that continues existing in a relationship because they haven't found the right one? You know, that relationship of convenience that you reference in the book.
To stay in a relationship because you haven't found the right one yet might be missing the obvious. I decided I was going to run away from my problems with romance by joining the priesthood. By the grace of God, I got turned down and got told by a guy that was very influential in my life, but I never saw him again after that day. You really need to stay where you're at, John, until leaving is not the solution to the problem. Do something.
That was great advice.
Do something about the relationship that you're in. And we encourage couples to take the risk to learn enough about each other to decide that they are going to grow together or they're going to grow apart, but they're not going to beat each other up in the process.
Totally makes sense. So, again, if people want to contact you, they can call you at 732-797-1444, and that is Leadom's Counseling Center, and you have made it your mission to help couples in recovery to get in the end, and to get more real. Any last thoughts before we end for tonight?
Take the risk. Take the risk to find out that your partner may very well be your very best friend, and at the very least, make a commitment that you're going to be as emotionally intimate with your partner as you have been sexually or otherwise.
And I would have to say to just not settle. I know that oftentimes I thought I would just settle, that it wasn't that bad no matter what romantic relationship I was involved in, and I realized that there is no reason to settle, and certainly no reason to settle in my romantic relationship, my marriage with John, and to expect and to go after the very best.
Oh, John and Elaine, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. It does my heart good to hear that there's lots and lots of hope for couples in recovery, and I like the fact that you're doing it a different way. I know you've met with lots and lots of success, so I encourage anybody listening to get One in the Spirit, the meditation course for recovering couples. Thanks so much, guys. It was a pleasure getting to meet with you a couple of months ago, and I hope to see you again.
It has been our pleasure. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you so much, Carol. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was a fascinating conversation. I 100% endorse their work. I think they're marvelous. And I want to just say thanks for listening. I know things are always controversial whenever you're talking about sexual addiction. But you know, there'll only be one of you at all times, so I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch you next week and have a great opportunity to be real, to work on your recovery, and to know that there is strength, recovery, and hope. Have a wonderful week.